The title of this lesson is Karma. But let me open class this evening by reading to you from page 52 of Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross' book, Death, The Final Stage of Growth. Perhaps you had not thought of death as a part of the growth process, but a part of a less exalted experience. And I read to you from the chapter entitled The Death That Ends Death in Hinduism and Buddhism. Although rebirth is considered by Hindus to be an unfortunate destiny which every person should strive to escape at the earliest possible opportunity, these same sages recognize the equally paradoxical fact that without providing the creatures with a means to be reborn, there would be no occasion to strive for the realization of spiritual liberation. In other words, the very possibility of achieving liberation from ignorance and death rests upon the precondition that mankind be granted a succession of opportunities to make a gradual advance in the direction of that goal. Hence, death is to be viewed as both a necessity and a blessing. Death comes to the creatures who inhabit the finite world, not because of the inviolable law of fate or by the ruthless judgment of an angry God, but as the result of the moral and spiritual quality of each person's own deeds. It is an individual's karma that is the fundamental cause of birth and death. And for the time being, until all creatures have liberated themselves from the law of rebirth, a provision must be made both for the coming to be and the passing away of things for the sake of the well-being of the world. And I told you in another lesson that we must die because we will not die. We will not die to the small self, and so the provision is made that we will, and in time we will rise into that larger identity from which we will have eternal consciousness, not eternal life. We have eternal life right now. Your life is an eternal process. Our lesson today is on karma. And karma is something that you understand deep inside yourself, but perhaps you do not know that you understand it, but you will. At the level of ordinary life, everything is shaped by this cosmic law. But before explaining karma, I would like to draw attention again to the word reincarnation. And you will remember that reincarnation is divided into four parts. Re, meaning back again, in, carn, from the Latin word flesh, and shun, meaning the act of. And so the word, therefore, signifies literally the act of being back again in the flesh. And this implies that we have been here before. If we are back, then we have already been here, having departed from somewhere else, and now we have returned. And this word suggests the cyclic nature of human evolution. It implies an orderly process, an aspect of the universal rhythm of and the harmony of life. Now, the concept of reincarnation unveils the prospect of continuous growth. When we begin to understand this great law and principle, we will come to know that there need never be a stagnant moment in your life or a plateau or a period of in which you live in a static state. Every moment, each event, each unfolding experience can be a part of this continuing process of growth and of development. And in its light, you can conceive as reasonable a far-off developed state where the pure soul, loving, compassionate, and illumined, grown great beyond measure, beyond our present comprehension, from this experience of incarnating here on earth, having evolved into the consciousness of that whole or fully developed self that we have the living example of in Jesus the Christ and other great mystics and masters. Now that self dwells in a state of eternal now, in a timelessness and in a vastness that is not encompassed by space. This is the heaven of the Christian, the nirvana of the Hindu, and in it one lives with fully awakened powers and consciousness. Each moment is an exquisite experience of love and joy, of pure ecstasy. And such a person, whether active here or in some other realm, is merged in cosmic consciousness or Christ or God consciousness forever. But that self, even from that point, then begins to move forward into other unfolding experiences, because in our Father's house are many mansions. In the universe, there are many levels, and we're always moving from where we are to that place that we have not yet experienced. The concept of reincarnation, when shorn of fallacy and false notions, can elevate your vision of life and of the realms of spirit into a beautiful system of reason and of understanding. Now, great attention is required to grasp this principle, because it is so against what we have learned in the past. But you will be richly repaid for the effort that you make to accept what you already know. One of the beautiful things that begins to happen when an understanding of reincarnation unfolds is that life does no longer offer you any perplexing problems. Things become clear, things that you did not understand before, from this more exalted and elevated position of understanding. Did you know that no greater enigma confronts us than the apparent injustices that are everywhere in evidence? All around us, we witness what appears to be unearned sorrows. How could this possibly have happened to one so young, or one so old, or one so good, whatever good is, we think? He or she left before their time. Their cycle was unfinished, we thought. And this expression can be evidenced by the newspaper headlines of this very evening, if you will look at them. Now, these seeming tragedies are explained if to reincarnation we link the law of action and reaction that is called karma. Reincarnation and karma are all a part of the same cyclic and universal system. Now, karma is defined in the dictionary as the sum total and the ethical consequences of a person's good or bad actions, comprising thoughts, words, and deeds during the successive phases of his existence and regarded as determining his destiny. In other words, the term karma indicates simply that the effects of our thoughts and feelings and physical acts are cyclic in nature, returning to their origin or source, that everything we do and think and feel each moment of our existence does not lie fallow at our feet, but as if by some magic comes back to us, its cause unremembered, but bringing into our experience that day the events that we call the now. We generate and launch these forces as we think and feel and act, and they return to us in time, bearing the exact measure of good or of ill that motivated their creation. And under the ceaseless operation of this law, we are confronted inevitably by the destiny arriving today that was created yesterday. In other words, we have done it to ourselves. Isn't that great? Golly, if someone else had done it, we couldn't find the handle to correcting it. Now, as we deal with our present circumstances, beginning to realize that they have arisen from within ourselves, that cause within our own consciousness lies, then we can remember that our acts today are literally creating tomorrow's situations and conditions, And with this exquisitely high knowledge, you can see that everything that you do or fail to do in the area of assuming your responsibilities now is predetermining tomorrow. So there is no future. There is only now continuing to express itself when tomorrow arrives. Let's begin by establishing the fact that karma is our friend, not our foe. And through an understanding of karma and its action, we can become masters of our fate by remote control. Now, this is very important, this next statement. No one can change and grow unless and until they experience the consequences of their actions. You have never made one adjustment in your life until you had to. Okay? And you didn't have to until you began to experience the consequences of your actions. And if you're holding back from a child or a spouse the consequences of their actions, you do them a great injustice. The doctrine of karma is sometimes pictured as a dark and fatalistic belief, rather than a statement of law operating similarly to that of gravitation. There's nothing dark or ritualistic about gravity. We understand it and we cooperate with it because we got tired of getting thumped when we were children. And we've learned to stand up tall and straight and not to jump off of any tall buildings if we could possibly help it, because we know what will happen. And the law of karma operates in exactly the same way, but in the invisible realm of your mind. Karma may be thought of as a beneficent playback of corrective forces. In modern engineering, use is made of a feedback principle to correct the misuse of machinery and of electronics. And the science of cybernetics explains this mechanism of feedback. As a matter of fact, the word cybernetics comes from a Greek word meaning to steer, to guide, and to govern. And you have built within your mind a law that guarantees that you will experience a feedback system. It's the law of karma. Karma steers the unsteerable. It guides the unguidable, and it governs the ungovernable. And if you don't believe it, you just keep on, and it will bring you kicking and squealing at last to that point of surrendering and of the willingness to move forward in the direction that will correct the suffering that is caused by misdirection. All suffering upon the earth is caused by misdirected activity of thought and feeling. And karma, the law of karma, brings us back on course. And the feedback mechanism, the feedback principle, never ever makes a correction if we're going straight toward our source. It's only when we begin to deviate that the feedback mechanism comes into play. It's when we're off the path, and this is the way it is with karma. When we begin to steer away from the path, things begin to be a little uncomfortable. And in time, with greater wisdom and more sensitivity to this law, we begin to achieve a more skilled employment of our natural and spiritual forces, which is to say that we grow wiser through forced experience. It's like forced feeding. We're not wise because we're smart. We grow wise because we are not very smart. And we prove it in our experience. Now, a usable knowledge of the law of karma increases immensely one's powers of creativity. Now, you can perform all corrections within yourself from this moment forward with a cheerful, positive spirit, because you now know that the old bugaboo of human nature is being changed continuously with no effort lost as you begin to work out your karmic patterns. What this means is that every event and situation in your life is usable. There is no unusable area if you understand the law of karma. If you and I truly realize that by our acts today or our inactions, we are actually creating the physical conditions that we shall inherit as our tomorrow, and that by our feelings we are attracting the atmosphere of that environment, and that by our thoughts transmitted into action, we are creating the character that shall be ours in future incarnations. And what is tomorrow but a future incarnation? Tonight you go to sleep and you go somewhere outside the body, and tomorrow you come back into the body, so to speak. It's a new day, it's a new dawning, it's a new birth, it's a rebirth as a possibility. And if you and I know that we are indeed reaping as we sow, then there is no room for the smoldering resentment that is so prevalent among people in the world today. There's no room for blaming others for our own shortcomings, whether an individual or a race. We must all ultimately assume our own personal responsibility for being where we are. And from this point of view, then, our lives can use each event in a positive and purposeful way rather than in a blaming and judgmental way, saying, in effect, how could this happen to a nice person like me? How could you have done that? Or how could they have done that? Or I would be better off if it were not for outside forces and other personalities. With an understanding of reincarnation and karma, nothing is lost. And every experience, each relationship offers an opportunity for growth and change, especially your problems. All those beloved problems, those things that we would not have if we could possibly not have them, become the most useful tools of all for our growth. That which we would escape, we can only escape by moving through and into and rising above. No longer can you and I ever walk away from anything in weakness, in anger, in resentment. No. We must walk into that situation from strength, from love, from wisdom, and from understanding. And karma does not imply that we are to live in intolerable conditions. It means that we are to rise above those conditions, and then we can be released from them by a change either in the conditions or the decision to move forward into a higher experience. But from strength. Did Jesus Christ understand and teach the law of karma? You bet he did. Over and over again, constantly, he was talking about it. So many examples that we would not have time. But in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew, the 5th chapter, let me read to you. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and give glory or honor or recognition to your Father who is in heaven. Take no personal credit. If you wish to really practice the law of karma, get the ego out of it. Take no personal credit for your good works. Think not that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. We will live under the law of karma until it has accomplished every last farthing of its purpose in our growth. Now, karma cannot and was never designed to take us all the way. It takes us as far as it is destined to take us, and then we are released into a higher law that I'll discuss more fully with you in Lesson 5 next week. Jesus went on to say, you've heard it said to the men of old, the old understanding, you shall not kill, and whoever kills shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you, you cannot even be angry in your own home, or you will be under the law of judgment. And he said this to the Jews because they had a thing in their day that in their own home they were secure from all law. He was. She wasn't. You understand that. He could do anything and get away with it inside his own home. There was no law that could come inside his home and tell him what to do. And Jesus said, don't you believe it? Everything you do, everything you think, if you even express anger towards your brother, Look out. Now, his parables on sowing and on reaping are classic examples of the action of the law of karma. But Christianity has never understood these great parables and lessons in their true light, in the true meaning, and they've called them something else. But if you'll read them with the idea of karma, cause and effect in mind, and thinking of the sowing as the thoughts and the emotions that you sow daily, then you will be immensely enlightened by these great truths. There are many who regard karma as a molder of character. But karma is not a molder of character. No. You begin to mold your character when you begin to understand and consciously work to reshape your karma. I would call your attention to the instance in the New Testament, John the 9th chapter, when Jesus was asked regarding the cause of the affliction of the man who was born blind. You and I have asked this question many times in our own experience. How could this happen to a child or to an adult? How could someone be born with such imperfection and others with such great powers? His disciples asked, "Master, why was this man born blind? Was it a result of his own sins or that of his parents?" And this question was asked in order that Jesus might determine between the two prevailing theories of that day. These were people who were arguing among themselves about which theory was correct. That the blindness was caused according to the operation of the law of Moses, which held that the sins of the parents were visited on the children into the third and fourth generation. Well, that earlier law of Moses was a metaphysical concept of thinking and feeling. You and I, with this new understanding, are becoming our own parents. What you think and feel today is the parent of your experience tomorrow. Thinking is masculine and feeling is feminine, and it's the intercourse or the coming together of these two aspects of our own mind that is the creative process. And so we are becoming our own parents under this new understanding of the law of karma, parenting our future. And we are held into the third and fourth generation of experience to that law of thinking and feeling that we are responsible for today. The second thing that they were asking Jesus was that it was caused according to the law of karma along the lines of reincarnation that we're considering here tonight. And because of some sin which the man had committed in some past incarnation. For no other explanation of this passage is possible, and it shows the prevalence of the idea of reincarnation among the people of that time. It was a part of their religious heritage and background, and they considered that just like you consider the earth being round. That was basic to their thought. Now, Jesus promptly rose above these two limited conceptions and interpretations, and in the light of his superior spiritual knowledge, he answered and explained the higher law, the one that we're going to talk about next week. He said, "Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but this is so that the works of God should be made manifest in him." In other words, he was saying, neither of these things are really the question. By works of God, Jesus implied the operation of a higher law than the law of karma. And then he set out to prove it before their very eyes, the higher law, by restoring the sight to the man who was blind. He said and demonstrated constantly that there was a law above that of the human condition, something that was above punishment for sins committed. It was a law of love, of grace, of mercy, of forgiveness, of releasing from the past. A law which operated for everyone and could be demonstrated by anyone and which affected the just and the unjust alike. You see, the law that he was talking about, he did not work it just on the good people. He said there aren't any. It was usually the bad guys that got fixed first. Remember that. If you think you're pretty good, nothing much can happen. Now, many people mistakenly believe that you must work out your karma. That you discover your karma and then you're going to work it out. That, my friends, will take an awful long time if you'll get a real good look at some karmic patterns. And while you're working it out, you might discover that you have created another one in the process that in turn will need to be worked out. And that is the unending cycles of the human intellect. You cannot overcome, so to speak, your bad karma with good karma. Yes, it is important to create a good karma, and Jesus taught a system of love and of good thoughts and of creative emotions and of good deeds. But he said that while good works were absolutely necessary, that good works alone were not enough, that a person cannot save themselves. Remember, he said, which of you by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? There's something from above that must save us. A higher something. He that is within us is greater than he and the experiences that live within the world. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, once made a statement that I dearly love. He said, Christ is king of karma. Now, Christ is the mind of God appearing in every person. And Jesus was the person who made the perfect demonstration of that inner fourth dimensional possibility. And Christ, or cosmic or God consciousness, is the level of the fourth dimension. And love or mercy is its law. And karma is the law of the three-dimensional human identity. And justice is its law. Now, Christ is the higher law of mercy that cancels the lower law of justice with love. Let me ask you a simple question, and you will immediately understand what I'm talking about. Which do you want in this moment? Justice or mercy? I'll guarantee you justice will do every one of us in. Right now. Don't ever ask for justice, friends. Mercy. Oh, God, have mercy on me. And karma is the law of the human personality. And love is the law of individuality or of the Christ. Christ is the king of karma. And it will cancel our karma without having to work it out. In Lessons in Truth, a basic Unity textbook, in the chapter on personality and individuality, I read to you, personality applies to the human part of you, the person, the external. It belongs to the region governed by the intellect. Your personality may be agreeable or disagreeable to others. When you say that you dislike anyone, you mean that you dislike his personality with your personality. Okay? You dislike that exterior something that presents itself to you from the outside, that outer changeable person, in contradistinction to the inner or real person. But it is our own personality that also dislikes. And it is our own personality that must be canceled. Individuality is the term used to denote the real, eternal person or self of you that was created in the image and after the likeness of God in the beginning. Read it in the first chapter of Genesis. It's the Christ or cosmic nature that must come into visibility through every one of us. And then we become individualized expressions of God. Now, John the Baptist, and I'm still reading from Lessons in Truth. John the Baptist represents the illumined intellect, the highest development of human consciousness. The intellect can only take us so far. And karma is the law of the intellect. Now, we may think of John as standing for personality, whereas Jesus typifies the divine self or individuality which cancels our karma. And John, recognizing the superiority of Jesus, said, he must increase in me, but I must decrease. Personality must increase. And Jesus went around canceling the karma of those people, and they were healed of the afflictions caused by their karmic patterns of negativity and of the misuse of their mind forces. The word karma is Sanskrit, meaning come back. Come back. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. There's a strange law in the universe that everything that goes out into the universe comes back. It's also true of our solar system. Everything that comes from our sun center ultimately in our solar system comes back into that sun, and you physicists know that. Einstein once proved in one of his theories that has not yet been demonstrated that if you can shine a flashlight, if you can stand still, perfectly still, and shine a laser beam straight ahead, it will eventually come back and hit you in the back of your head. You will have to stand there in excess of 5 billion years. But it will do it because everything comes back. That is a law, a cosmic law. And we're dealing with it at the level of our own individual minds. If one's consciousness is spiritual, their karma becomes more active and exaggerated and more quickly returns than that of a person who's living on the physical and mental levels alone. In other words, the more you know, the more you're responsible for. And so a person with a knowledge of spiritual law, which he does not practice, suffers greatly in consequence. You understand that. You cannot get away with things that you could get away with 6 months ago. You have tried it. And you've been very innocent about it. Oh, God, I... And zap. It comes back quickly and dramatically. Remember in the Old Testament, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And that sounded like a God there with that pen and paper writing down what you had done and saying, I'm going to fix you. This is a description of the law of karma. You see, the word Lord in the Old Testament means law. And it's the law of karma which takes vengeance, not God. Remember that you never, ever need to get even with anyone else for what they did to you. Don't try to fix them for fixing you. Oh, because that'll only get you fixed. Again, release them. Remember Jesus said, forgive them, for they know not what they did. If someone has done you an injustice, they will ultimately pay the price, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. But do not want them to do that, because your very desire to want them to be punished becomes your own punishment. And if there's anything left in you that wishes another person to suffer the consequences of their acts, you suffer the consequence of that selfish, negative, destructive thought. Oh, if you and I could see how evenly balanced is the scale and with what great intensity it works, we would be so careful of our every thought. We would monitor every feeling, every mood, every attitude, every word that escapes our lips, and every action would be one that would be designed for good for all. The mind of God in us, the Christ in us, ultimately will lift us out of this law of righteous retribution or karma into the law of grace or love. I was leaping through Life After Life by Raymond Moody the other day. That inspired book that he wrote after he'd studied more than 100 subjects who had experienced clinical death and had been revived. And in the chapter entitled The Experience of Dying, Dr. Moody wrote about a being of light that almost invariably the clinically dead saw and experienced, and it was an incredible experience for all of them. This light was of an indescribable brilliance that did not hurt their physical eyes because they had no physical eyes to be dazzled. But they felt that this light was a presence, that it was personal, it had a definite personality, it talked to them, it spoke to them, it directed them in thought and feeling, and the warmth and love that they experienced from it was of a divine quality. Now, in almost every instance when they experienced this incredible being of light with this personality, this light, this being, created in them a review of their experience in this incarnation that they had just escaped from in the body. Now, it was obvious that this being, this individual of light, could see everything that had happened to each person. It did not need to know. It already knew. It saw completely. But this review that came before them was remarkable because of how extraordinarily rapid it was. The remembrance was instantaneous. Everything appeared at once. And they could take it all in with one mental glance in a fraction of an earth second. And the review was incredibly vivid and real, and even the emotions and feelings associated with each of the events that had happened in a whole lifetime were there and could be comprehended in sequence. And what the review showed them was the patterns of their livingness. And each one said that the being of light was showing them, directing them, helping them to understand their responsibility to life, teaching, but never judging, never blaming, never saying when it showed them how wrong they had been and the negative patterns that were there. It never said, you shouldn't have been that way. It said, you couldn't help it then, but you can help it now, can't you? And each one that came back with an intense desire to live a better life, to learn to love and to understand, because this being of light was teaching them the absolute exquisite importance of learning to love, saying, you thought you knew how to love, but you didn't really, did you? You thought you understood, but you didn't, did you? Now, go back and love and understand. And there are numerous examples that you can read in the book of the direction. And each of these people, when they came back into their physical body and into their lives, was changed. Things that were formerly important were no longer important. People that were caught up in the activity of others, concerned about other people, were not at all. They said, all is well. Go your way. I've got my own business to take care of. Question that someone asked me, is everyone aware of what their karma is? If not, how do we find out what it is? Answer, Matthew, the 7th chapter, the 3rd verse. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the log out of your eye? Hypocrite, first take the speck out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to take the log out of your brother's. In other words, begin to observe yourself. If you would like to become aware of your karmic patterns, begin to observe yourself. Take a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. Observe yourself moment by moment. Listen to what you're saying and be astonished that those words have escaped your mouth. Monitor your thoughts and be amazed that such garbage could remain in a spiritual being like you. Don't be concerned about another's progress until your own progress is well underway. Question, is there an effective system anyone can use to change their karma? Answer, yes. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the most effective system ever devised to change your karma. It originally had nothing to do with alcohol and still does not. The system is an ancient system called the Tao, meaning the way. It's the way out of your karma. It's the way into the resurrected or perfect self that we'll talk about next week in lesson number 5. Oliver Wendell Holmes, in his inspired lines from the Nautilus, wrote, build thee more stately mansions, O my soul. Build thee a more stately consciousness, O my soul. As the swift seasons roll, as the swift incarnations, do you notice how short your life is seeming to be in this incarnation? Leave thy low-vaulted past. Let each new temple, nobler than the last, shut thee from heaven with a dome more vast, till thou at length art free, leaving thine outgrown shell by life's unresting sea. You are a spiritual being, divine in nature, and ultimately you must not only shed this physical body, but the consciousness that has caused it to be. Building a newer, nobler temple or identity. And from this will come a freedom and a joy and a beauty that is the promised destiny that your heart has restlessly sought. The law of reincarnation and of karma are the first giant steps into that eternal identity of beauty and of love. And so it is.